Welcome to Relationships in Recovery, a podcast that goes beyond storytelling and provides uncensored and vulnerable shares with insights into the world of sobriety and some of the biggest reasons for relapse, which is sex, love, and relationships. My name is Eve Milford, and I am your sober sexologist. This podcast has been inspired from my own journey of substance addiction and the many years I've studied sex, love, and relationships. And I'll be sharing with you how to navigate intimacy, boundaries, rejection, sex, love, and so much more, all whilst living a life in sobriety and recovery. So come along with me and let's do this. Welcome to another episode. Today, I was inspired to talk about something that I don't think really does get spoken about a lot in sobriety. And that is happiness and joy. I mean, it does in the sense of, especially if you're in a 12-step program, you know, that's the essence, right, of sobriety. It's like serenity and happiness and joy and all of those things. That's, you know, that's where it leads you to, right? But what about those instances where, and I'm just recalling this from my own experience of being in early sobriety and, you know, sort of having the awakening and having the spiritual experience and all of those things. And if anyone's listening and they did not do 12-step, then, you know, it's not to say that you didn't have any of these experiences as well. And just by I mean like spiritual experiences, I mean like, you know, really finding inner peace and surrendering and having self-acceptance and like having that awakening of how I didn't realize my life could be any different. Like, I think that was definitely an awakening that happened quite early on for me. I can recall coming home one day, and I mean, this was sort of, I was a couple of years in sobriety, and I think this is quite a poignant moment in my sobriety, actually. Coming home and seeing that, you know, there were dishes in the sink that were dirty and they needed to be cleaned, and there was clothes everywhere and I needed to tidy them up. And, you know, in general, my apartment was a bit of a mess. It was a bit of a shambles and I needed to clean it. And I can remember feeling a lot of joy from seeing that, because in the past that would have been because I was just lazy and I didn't want to do it, and because I just, you know, I was too busy getting drunk, too busy getting high, whatever it was that I was doing, I was too busy to even care about my environment. And this time, being in that space and seeing it, it was like, well, my clothes were all over the floor because I went on a date, and it took me that long to try and find an outfit that I wanted to wear, so, and I didn't have time to pick up the clothes. And my dishes were dirty because I got in from work and, you know, then had to rush out and get some, you know, do whatever and then come back, and I didn't have time to do that. You know, and there was time to do all of those things. But it was so funny looking at it from a different perspective and a different way of thinking and a different way of being, instead of this calamity of life that just kind of did the same thing, which was, you know, I used to go to work, go home and drink. Then, you know, I'd do that Monday to Wednesday, and then come Thursday, I'd probably, you know, include drugs in that when I got home. And then Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, the same alcohol and drugs. And it was with the same people in the same circle. There was no one new. And if it was anyone new, you know, I didn't really put myself out there to speak with them. So I think in essence, that for me was my spiritual experience or my, like, I don't know if it was an awakening. I'm not sure it was. I think I had a different awakening, but it was definitely a spiritual experience for me in terms of that. And I say that because, you know, it was like a greater thing had sort of given me this chance to look at it in a different way, in a different light, and see it in a different perspective. Being the witness to my life, basically, because I'd never done that before. And so allowing myself to see this in a different way. Now, that caused a lot of joy for me to suddenly notice that and have that happen. But when I first got sober, I, of course, had all these big emotions, anger, grief, rage, huge emotions. And I had them big, big time because I had them when I was drinking. You know, I was very much the victim when I was drinking. I would constantly be telling my story and my woes of how bad my life had been. And when it came to anything like happiness or joy or pleasure, you know, that's another one. And some of this is such an overlap with some of the things I've already spoken about in previous episodes, but I found those even harder to try and decipher or to know what to do with without picking up. Anger and rage, you know, it was very toxic anger and rage. It wasn't healthy at all, the way that I projected those emotions, the way that I expressed them. But with happiness and joy, I was stumped, and pleasure, like, I was so stumped with that. Even having desires. Like, isn't that crazy? That is so crazy to think now that I had no desire for anything else. The only thing I wanted was to get drunk and to be high. That's all I wanted in life. I had no, you know, I think I might have wanted a house. Something like that. I don't know. But something just kind of simple like that. There was no aspirations. There was no nothing. You know, I can recall being with these particular people, and we would laugh at, like, the, you know, people going running in the morning whilst I had a coffee mug of wine, and calling these people who were out jogging in the early hours losers. Like, oh my God, look at them. What losers. Not really realizing who the loser actually was in that scenario. Like, I literally had no clue. I had no idea. And I couldn't even to this day tell you if those people who were saying that with me actually believed it themselves or not as well. Or if I honestly don't know. I don't know whether that was their truth for them. So coming back to the truth and, like, the falsity that happens from, you know, drinking and alcohol and drugs and things, and whatever it is that is the numbing agent for someone, having that numbing agent and then getting sober or clean or whatever it is, when you stop that dysregulation from happening, coming into this space of happiness and joy and pleasure, because even pleasure was a non-starter. That was fake for me. Like, now don't get me wrong, I did find pleasure in things. Like, I obviously found pleasure in drugs and alcohol, and sexual activities and things like that when I was, but you know, goes to say that when I was high and when I was drinking, I rarely did anything like that when I was sober. So all of those things and relearning them and rewiring them was incredibly difficult because I didn't know that. I didn't know. Look, I knew that there was a part of me that was like trying to repress, you know, all the trauma and the bad things and all the things that the bad emotions, the sadness and all of that and the victim and like just really trying to repress all of that. I got that, understood that. But what I didn't understand was, you know, that was also the other things that were being repressed were the joy and the happiness and the pleasures of life were being repressed because I didn't want to see myself as being a loser. I didn't want to see myself, and I'm using this word because that was the word that was, you know, sort of branded around a lot, and I'm not by any means saying that anyone that is in recovery or anyone that drinks or has drugs is a loser, because that's not the case. However, it was kind of like that was definitely a part. Like I definitely would put myself in that space of thinking life was one way and only one way. And thinking that people who didn't drink or do drugs, there was something wrong with them. That you had to be suspicious of them almost. That you had to be careful of them, like they might have been up to something. Which is weird, isn't it? Because it's usually the other way around. Oh, goodness. So this being thrown by happiness and joy and love, goodness me, that one threw me a curveball. And you know, still to this day, I can have a little bit of trouble with that one. But I allow it more. I allow it a lot more than what I ever used to. And that comes down to boundaries, I think, as well. A lot of boundaries here of what I thought made me happy versus what actually did make me happy. Again, you know, like this idea that alcohol is going to make me happy forever and ever and ever, and drugs are going to make me joyful forever and ever and ever, and I'm never going to stop doing them. Like I honestly didn't think I was ever going to stop drinking. Like that would have seemed absurd to me had you've told me that years and years ago. And so with all of that, with this sort of foreign concept that these are actually, even though they're deemed as good, in my world in active addiction, happiness and joy and pleasure were kind of, I want to say they were like a, badge of, I suppose it's like that Instagram life, right? If you look at Instagram and see people's lives, I'm like, oh, look, they're having such a wonderful time. And really, is that the truth? It's kind of like that's what alcohol did for me. It was this facade, apart from when I, you know, really did get deep into the vodka, and then that's when I'd be like, oh yeah, my life's shit and da 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 and poor me, woe is me, you know, a lot of woe is me constantly. So getting sober, and I remember people saying, yeah, you know, like grief is a big one, right? So of course people are like, what's going to happen if like I get in a relationship and then we split up? Oh, I'll probably drink. What's going to happen if, you know, someone passes who I really love? Oh, I'll probably drink. So these are all the things, like, all the fears, right, that we all look at and we kind of go, oh, well, I'm definitely going to put some shit in place for this because I don't want to pick up a drink. So I therefore, you know, I'm going to be very conscious of my relationship, or I'm going to be really like, make sure I'm speaking to the people I need to speak to, make sure that I've got all the therapy in the world, make sure that I've got the support network there because I want to get into this relationship, or even like dating or whatever it is, of knowing that you've got this network of people, or that you've got things in place for them, for those things that you absolutely know are going to trigger you, that are going to be your catalyst for, and you know, I don't think I've ever been, I've never really thought, oh, there was actually a couple of times I was going to say, I don't recall any time where I've just thought, oh, but if I do that, I might relapse. But there actually has been a few of those moments. And it's funny, isn't it? Because now when I look at it and think to myself, did I really think I was going to relapse, or did I just say that because I was fearful and that was just the best excuse to not do it, which I think is probably the key point there. But everyone, you know, if you're going to relapse, it's like that shit creeps up really well. It's a creeper. It kind of comes in very, very slowly. And sort of builds up. Anyway, moving away from that, but definitely speaking about how you know, how tripping up on the shoelaces. Someone had said it's not the things that you immediately think are going to trip you up. It's the things that you maybe haven't experienced before properly. Like, new experiences are going to be the things that are going to trip you up, because most of us have lost people that we love, and most of us have lost those in, you know, either in active addiction or, you know, in recovery. At some point in our life, we've lost somebody we love, whether it was when we were young. So we've had that experience of knowing that it is sad. A, we know it's sad. And B, we know grief is part of that process. So we know that, so we can brace ourselves for it. Same with losing a love. And as I speak about, it's part of sort of most of the stuff I talk about in recovery, and especially in terms of sex stuff and relationship stuff, my witnessing of this is that relationships are probably one of the biggest reasons why people do relapse. And so, you know, again, most of us have had a relationship that has failed. Some of us may not have been in love, so that's slightly different, but having that experience of love and then heartbreak. And again, you know, loss in itself is something that most of us have experienced. And we generally experience that when we're young. And that can even be the loss of a teddy bear, or the loss of, you know, great or small, whatever it is, we've experienced loss. Again, grief. So we've all experienced that at some point in our lives. Whether in addiction or out of addiction, whether young or old, it's been experienced at some point in our life. And so when we get into this case of like our actual, you know, and happiness and joy has been experienced, right? But when we actually go into, and I'm not saying this is the case for everybody, because I know that some people, when they drink, like, they always have fun. That wasn't the case for me. In fact, I absolutely cannot remember an occasion where I got drunk and had lots of fun. Now, maybe if I think way back to when I was in my early teens, but nothing before that. So, going through active addiction, we generally do have this, you know, the reason why we pick up, and then we go into these points of a victim mentality, of victimhood. You know, the woes are me, woe is me, and I'm just fucking pick up a drink and I'm just going to, it's just going to ease the pain. It's going to ease the pain. Ease the pain of the past. It's easing the pain of the future. And it's taking away any feelings that I feel in the present. And it's now for me thinking about that, it's really extreme. It's so extreme. And so what that does is it obviously takes away, or we have this lack of ability then to feel the pleasure, to feel the joy, to feel the happiness. So when we get sober, and it's not to say we've never had happiness or joy, right? Because again, we could have experienced that when we were younger. So we do know what that feels like. For me, again, happiness and joy and pleasure were all false, as far as I'm concerned, in my active addiction. I don't think there was any moment that I could truly feel like I was really happy. Just because when I think of the toxic relationships that were cultivated during that time, you know, maybe in that moment, in a moment, the feeling of happiness and joy could have been there. But I can tell you they were probably soon evaporated. And now thinking about when I first, you know, first going to sobriety and the joy and the happiness and all of those things, how did you celebrate without alcohol? Like, that was like a huge thing. Because of course, when you celebrate, and I feel like these are a couple of different things here. Celebrating, I think, is a little bit different to joy and happiness, like just feeling that on a regular basis. Celebration, again, that's one of those moments of like, you know, this is coming. Like, you know that you're going to celebrate your year's sobriety, or you know that you're going to celebrate your birthday, or you know that you're going to celebrate a wedding, or, you know, whatever, a birth, whatever it is, you know, you can prepare for that. And so having ways to celebrate is really good, but actually allowing the joy from that celebration to come in, I remember that being really strange. I remember it being really strange. Like, you know, you're having this ritual for celebration, whatever it is that's happening. And I'll go into a little bit more of that in a bit. But like, you know, feeling absolute love for a person was so foreign to me. Like, it made no sense. It was because I thought I'd felt it before. I thought I was in love before. I thought I knew the feeling. But it wasn't real. You know, maybe at the time it was, but it was a very different feeling, like in sobriety, of feeling love, actual love for a person. And the same with pleasure. I mean, I've spoken about, you know, and again, pleasure in all different forms, but I'm just going to talk about sex and sexuality and feeling pleasure in that sense. Again, like I've spoken about this before in other episodes. So, yeah, that feeling for me was different because I would perform, and it was a performative thing. And having the experience of being sober and feeling pleasure in a different way, again, not just in sex or in my sexuality, but in every form of like just allowing myself to be sitting in pleasure, in joy and in happiness, and just allowing myself to reclaim it. Reclaiming my pleasure has really been a massive part of the healing process for me, of liberating myself, of actually knowing what is fake, what I pretended I liked, what I pretended I enjoyed, just because probably everyone else was saying this is great and isn't it wonderful, to now being in a position to really verify that. It sort of pushed the boundaries with it a little bit as well, you know, to see whether or not that really was or really is the case. So huge. So authentically enjoying things, having happiness and all of those things really is a thing in sobriety of like how and why we get stuck with it. So there is this thing. It is called there's a few different names for it that's in there I've found. There's the hedonic set point, or it's called the hedonic treadmill, or the hedonic adaptation. Basically, what this is, it's an idea, it's a theory that that each individual has a level of happiness. And so it's just at this level, right? And so it can rise and it can fall in response to, you know, great things or toxic things. But ultimately, it tends to move back to a baseline, to where it's supposed to be. So then, of course, if we're taking substances to change this level, the dopamine, the flooding of dopamine comes in, and that begins to alter the circuitry that's happening in our brain. And so when we used to feel pleasure or happiness or joy at a certain space, a certain place, a certain point, that gets moved. And so when we're not on these substances, when we don't have this big rush of dopamine, anything below what that set point's been pushed to, because it doesn't go back, the baseline changes at that point, because we just keep on constantly flooding it with dopamine. So pleasure, that some things that we used to feel pleasure, we don't feel pleasure anymore because it gets moved. So normal life stuff doesn't really do it for us anymore, right? So that's when, again, you have to do the like kind of like rewiring and looking through and back to where can we feel pleasure and joy again? Where is this? So, of course, when we get sober, when all of a sudden this hedonic set point gets put back to its original state, this original place, the baseline. So when we're doing normal people things, normal life stuff, and then we're like, oh, well, how come that didn't float my boat before? And now I'm like feeling joy and happiness. I don't know what to do with this. So it's all about, coming back to that state and just really allowing the joy and the happiness and knowing that it's okay. It's okay. It's almost like, having anger and grief and sadness, knowing that that is okay to have. The problem is that people think that joy and happiness come with this acceptance. You know, they do. They come with this acceptance of, well, of course, you know, these are great things to be having, emotions to be having. These are wonderful feelings to have. Of course, I'm not knocking that. Of course it is. The problem is when you're in sobriety, you don't know. You don't know that because it's hard to remember what that feeling was. That's my journey anyway. And I wanted to share it just in case anyone else out there ever struggles with happiness and joy. Because I know sometimes there can be this guilt that comes in as well of, you know, am I allowed to feel this happiness and joy? Is that okay to feel, you know, seeing as I've spent most of my life feeling the opposite? And that's the thing, isn't it? When we feel the opposite, when we feel the sadness, the grief, and all of those, the anger, all of those emotions, that when we've been feeling those for so long, the feeling of happiness, joy, and pleasure really are so foreign that it does take a little bit of getting used to. So, but one thing I would love to share is how we can really just bring those elements in, those feelings in. So I've probably spoken about this one before, but it goes without saying, noticing it, just noticing the joy, the happiness, the love, the pleasure, just seeing how it feels for you. If it feels uncomfortable, don't feel shame with that. Don't feel that if it feels uncomfortable to be feeling happiness and joy and love and those things, like that's okay. It's because it is foreign, because it does not, again, we usually replace those feelings with shame or guilt or, something else. So if you're feeling that discomfort, allow the discomfort to be there. Allow it to be there. It is okay. It is so okay to be uncomfortable with feeling these feelings that seem so foreign and out of place. Maybe not out of place, but certainly things that we're supposed to know how we feel and how they feel. And, and I think a lot of shame comes in with that. And so what we're doing here is we're just really flexing that muscle to be able to know and start feeling comfortable with it. We're just opening that sort of window of tolerance of what joy and happiness and pleasure feel like. And, there really is this sort of element here of, again, when we're talking, if I talk about pleasure in the sense of sexuality and sex, it's the same, it's like that same thing. That if you've had certain experiences and then you feel pleasure and you might feel really uncomfortable about feeling that pleasure, it's just allowing yourself to notice that but not pushing yourself any further than you need to. So that is such a good one to sort of start off with, is just noticing the moments of joy and happiness and love and seeing what you feel, what pops up for you. And then reflecting on the positive changes in your life since becoming sober. I think this is a great one. I love it. I like doing it every now and then. And it is really enjoyable to do. Like I say, that moment of when I had, gone home and seen that my whole apartment was an absolute wreck, but then realizing, hold on a minute. It's because I actually go out now and I get home at a reasonable hour, but at a time that I can just get into bed. And I know that I'll do it all tomorrow. My clothes are all on the floor because of, wanting to look really fabulous and great and feel awesome about going out and meeting new people. So just really reflecting on sober life. And acknowledge your feelings. So remember when you couldn't feel it. Remember when perhaps it was a falsity. And I'm not saying this is going to be the case for everybody, but, being in that active substance use is very different. Like I certainly feel this is very different from the feelings of sober, the same feeling sober. It's different. Sometimes it's not, and as I was speaking that out, I was reflecting on what anger feels like, and sometimes I can feel, the resentment when that comes up. I can feel that is the same as if, when I was in that place of substance use, and that feeling is not nice. And that's where for me, I consider that like that dry drunk kind of feeling of like, oh, I need to do some shit with this. Like, I can't, this isn't just a resentment. Like, there's some real underlying things here. But also allowing the anger to be as it is, like, and not trying to change it and not sort of putting it in a box and being like, oh, this is like old behavior. This is bad behavior. It's like, this is just a feeling that I felt before and I don't like it. This is a feeling that I had when I would drink and I don't like it. So what do I do with this? And it's just acknowledging that. It's acknowledging that feeling. And it's the same, you know, when we have joy and we have happiness, of acknowledging it, and really allowing it to be something remarkable, because we get to feel it now. We get to actually feel the truth of our joy, the truth of our happiness, the truth of love, which is just beautiful. So breathe into the moments as well. When you do that, when you breathe into the pleasure, especially pleasure, when you breathe into how fantastic something feels for you, how pleasurable it feels for you, when you breathe into that space where that hits in your body, it can be phenomenal. I can remember specifically being on holiday, and I would do this. I would lie in, and as I'm speaking this, I'm visualizing a space I was in, and one thing I would do is lie in the pool, facing the sky, and I'd find a palm tree or a particular tree that was in, you know, there in that space, and I would just look up and gaze up and just be like, I will never forget this moment, and breathing into it and really breathing deep into that moment. And like I say, now I've got a few different trees and skies and swimming pools that I can remember. I've traveled around the world, and I did that in a few spots. And I was actively using substances. So just goes to show, you know, those that breath and that memory can really hold into that as well. So celebrating with friends and loved ones, of course, is always good. As I mentioned that earlier, like that celebration, knowing that there's a ritual there. I love rituals. If anybody knows me very well, I really love rituals. Rituals help with my sobriety, but also it really helps with intentions as well. So celebrating with friends, celebrating with loved ones, those that really just support you and your sobriety, and moving away from any of the toxic circles that may have appeared throughout your life, and just, yeah, knowing that you can move in and have really wonderful celebrations with loved ones. And again, when you're in those moments, breathing in that celebration, seeing where that falls in your body, where that sits in your body, and acknowledging what is it? Is it joy, happiness, love? Is it all of them? Is it pleasure? And then seeing what is it you desire, feeling the joy, the pleasure, everything. And then asking, what do I desire now? What do I desire now? Maybe it's nothing. Maybe you're just really content as you are. And making sure that you give back to yourself. This is such a great one. Allowing yourself to give yourself joy and pleasure and happiness. Buy a new book. Take yourself to a spa. Have a massage. Whatever it is. But treat yourself and allow yourself to receive. Because, you know, I've spoken about this before, and I'm sure I'm not the only one. I recall myself hating myself so much. And I was even speaking about this to a friend last night, just how that process in itself of knowing how worthy I am and how much I matter. And, you know, it's not easy. It is not easy going from absolutely hating yourself, despising yourself, to now knowing that you're so entirely worthy. And you're worthy of being sober. You're worthy of having the most deliriously happy, soulful, joyful, sober life. It is insanely good. Insanely good. Well, my loves, I feel like I've come to a close with this one. It was something, or is something, the joy and happiness piece is definitely something that I return to over and over again, because I do feel like it doesn't get spoken about enough. And I think it is, these are definite emotions that I think people assume they know how to have joy and happiness. But when you have been dysregulated for so long, when you have been gaslit for years and years, when you have been in these toxic places and spaces, it is so hard to come back to joy, love, and happiness. And I hope after listening to this that it normalizes it for you to know that it can feel uncomfortable to feel joy and happiness, especially if you haven't felt it for many, many years, and coming out of the numbness into this sort of new found way of life. I mean, maybe it's not. Maybe it's something that, you know, maybe you've been sober for many, many years, but the joy and the happiness might be, and it might, you know, one thing I definitely want to say is this isn't necessarily all about sobriety. This is about the environments that we would sit, the circles that we would be amongst, and our own self-talk, our own self-chat, and how we see ourselves now to, as opposed to in that time of feeling like such a victim and being so dysregulated and sitting in PTSD and sitting in, you know, complex trauma and all of the things, to then going into joy and happiness. And I think, you know, as I spoke of earlier on, that we definitely can feel the guilt and the shame that sits behind perhaps feeling those sort of happier, less toxic emotions. And also to say that those emotions can still be toxic too. Every emotion can be toxic. So with all of that said, I really want to normalize the fact that it is very difficult when you have been in specifically toxic relationships with self, with others, whatever that may be, whatever that may look like, to feel joy, happiness, and pleasure. And so, yeah, here we are, normalizing that, understanding that it's okay to feel the feels, but also to flex the muscle, to start having those beautiful, wonderful, healthy feelings, and really feeling them deep in your core, so you can really step forth and feel really empowered and know that you can move through anything and be happy and joyful and free. So I love you very, very much, and I cannot wait for the next one. See you then. Bye-bye.